This is a reading from Mark 2, 13 through 17. And you have one here, either in your pamphlet or on your seat, to read along if you'd like. Once again, Jesus went out beside the lake. A large crowd came to him, and he began to teach them. As he walked along, he saw Levi, son of Alphaeus, sitting at the tax collector's booth. "Follow me," Jesus told him, and Levi got up and followed him. While Jesus was having dinner at Levi's house, many tax collectors and sinners were eating with him and his disciples, for there were many who followed him. When the teachers of the law, who were Pharisees, saw him eating with the sinners and tax collectors, they asked his disciples, "Why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners?" On hearing this, Jesus said to them, "It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners." This is the word of the Lord. Hi, I'm Pete Giblin. I'm a member here at Church Without Walls. I'm also a member of the teaching team here. And I'm also somebody who has a real tough time telling the difference between like the good guy and the bad guy. I always get mixed up and sometimes rush to judgment and then realize I've been following the wrong person the whole time. One example of this is one example of my cluelessness was last week I was at Target last Sunday in the afternoon running errands, getting all the stuff we needed for the coming week, and I was at the check stand, and you know, the lady at the check stand is scanning my items, and she just started doing it, and then she goes, "Ugh." She takes another item, scans it, and looks up at me, and then just goes, "Ugh." And I didn't know what was going on, and she said, she looked up and said, "It's terrible, isn't it? It's terrible, isn't it?" And I said, "Yes, it is. It's terrible. It's terrible." And she said, "So have you been watching the game?" And I said, "I'm not a sports fan. If you know me, you know that I don't know anything about sports." And so I said, "No, I haven't been watching the game." And she said, "Well, we're losing." And I realized I had no idea who was losing, who we were, who the good guys were, who the bad guys were. I had no idea. So I'm always kind of mixed up with who's the good guy, who's the bad guy. This you can kind of follow my TV watching history and kind of tell the same thing about me. As a kid, I loved to watch Westerns, especially when cable TV was new and there were a million channels, and they didn't realize that they'd have to fill 24 hours of programming. They were, like on Saturdays, they would show Westerns all day. And I loved Westerns, mostly because I like to look at the men's clothing. I was very interested in that. So I'd watch these things, and I got such a mixed message that I had to sort of unscramble later, because in these, the Native Americans in those movies were always pitted as the bad guys. And then come to learn about like real history and stuff, that wasn't the case. It was very much the opposite, was it? And as far as cowboys and Indians go, historically, there's not really a reason for even cowboys to sort of intersect with that sort of conflict. And so realizing that hey, I had the wrong bad guy, and I had the wrong good guy. And as you jump forward a couple of decades, there's this TV show, The Wire, that really tries to, that did a wonderful job of sort of taking both sides of sort of good guy, bad guy, and turning it on its head and saying, hey, people that are involved in criminal activity, it really humanized that whole story and showed parts of their real lives and their families and what's going on. And then the good guys, they kind of showed, hey, sometimes the good guys are doing terrible things, and the people you think are good guys are doing some messed up stuff. But then, come full circle, TV has sort of taken that to an extreme. I don't know if you've seen the show Breaking Bad. I'll admit, I watch it. I'm riveted. But the problem is, that if you don't know the story, this is about a high school chemistry teacher who realizes he can make a fortune by mass producing his own recipe of high quality methamphetamines. and putting it out on the street, basically to children. And the weird, messed up thing about it is, as you watch, he's the main character. He's the good guy. And every time he almost gets caught by the police, you as a viewer want him to not get caught, which is really messed up, because he should be caught, right? He should be put away. So I get really mixed up with good guy and bad guy. And right now we're going through the book of Mark and a series that we've titled Mile Markers, kind of talking about how the book of Mark is a lot like a road trip in the sense that it has a pace of traveling. Jesus and his disciples are sort of going from one place to another and sort of having these sort of really moving turns as they go through it. And we're using a lot of sort of road trip metaphors to not only understand the book of Mark, but also kind of understand our lives and kind of say, hey, what are some major mile markers? What are some major milestones in my life that affected my spiritual journey? And tonight, we pick up a hitchhiker. Now, our culture has a lot of stigma about hitchhikers in general. And this character, Levi, in the story that I just read, is no stranger to stigma. So let's just unpack the story before I get into my kind of spin on things here. So the story starts out as you see that Jesus is sort of going out by the lake. And we're talking about the Lake of Galilee here. And it says, as he's walking, he's teaching the people. And kind of as we read that, we might go, oh, Jesus is so crazy. He's traveling all around. He's on this road trip. Not really. See, the deal is, in that day, rabbis sort of, during the week, they would teach people. By the custom was they would walk around in the out of doors. And their students would follow them around. And as they walked, they would kind of show them things and teach them things and explain things, which is kind of weird to think about. If you ever went to like a Bible study or maybe even just a class in school and the teacher just started walking away and you had to go follow them as they spoke. But that's what's going on here. And they're basically in the town of Capernaum, same town as the previous stories we read that Deanna told us about last week, where a paralytic was healed. There's a lot of healings going on. We're still in Capernaum, which is Jesus' sort of home base at this point. So Jesus is actually home from the road trip, kind of back in his home base. And the place of Capernaum is kind of significant because we're in sort of like the province of Galilee here, and Capernaum is sort of like almost like a frontier town. It's like a pit stop on the way. If you're taking goods from one of the other provinces to the capital of Galilee there, which is Tiberias, that's where people would stop, and it was basically a customs station. So that's where we meet Levi, a tax collector. A lot of the other tax collectors in the New Testament that we kind of read about, the tax collector thing, they're like a Zacchaeus or whatever. It's kind of more... they're more of the story of they go to the people and extract taxes from the citizens. And Levi is a guy who actually is more probably, people think more of probably a customs worker. So as goods would come in and out of that province, he would tax them. But the deal is, still, tax collectors were notorious, and Levi wouldn't be immune to this, for basically overtaxing people, and that's how they made their money. So as much as they charged over what was really owed, that's how much they would collect. And so we're assuming here, just based on the title of tax collector, that Levi is someone who immorally extracts money from his own people. Now, tax collectors, this is not just an ancient thing, and this is not just specific to that culture, that tax collectors have been sort of... hated in some ways. This is a universal thing throughout time and throughout geography and culture. Even 20th century Liverpool songwriter George Harrison, in the lead-off track to an iconic album, Revolver, the Beatles' Revolver, he says, "Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me, because I'm the tax man." Yeah, I'm the tax man. Should 5% appear too small? Be thankful I don't take it all. Because I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man. If you drive a car, I'll tax the street. If you try to sit, I'll tax your seat. If you get too cold, I'll tax the heat. If you take a walk, I'll tax your feet. So the deal is, tax collectors have always, whenever and wherever you go, had a bad reputation. But see, in this particular culture, in first century Judea, tax collectors weren't just stigmatized. They were also viewed as being unclean. They couldn't go to temple. They couldn't be viewed as someone who could get close to God or somebody who could have any kind of relationship with God. Levi was in essence, excommunicated by his people and seen as a traitor, seen as somebody who had power over people and was basically extorting them. So he was an outcast in so many ways. And along comes Jesus teaching his people and stops at the booth, which might have been like a customs station, and says, "Follow me," and Levi does. And not only that, but Jesus has dinner with him later on. And we see when the religious teachers hear about that, they go visit and say, "Hey, how come this is happening? Why is Jesus hanging out with tax collectors and sinners?" And so as we kind of think about the story, just a real simple thing to think about is just, where are you in this story? Where do you see yourself in this story? We've got characters like Jesus. We've got his followers. We've got Levi the tax collector. We've got the religious leaders. And where do you see yourself in that mix? One good way to just kind of to do that visualization is to make a drawing of that scene. And so that's what I would encourage you to do on the back of this green thing. You could do it now. You could do it later when you're home. But I would just encourage you to, it's sometimes a good practice when you kind of go, "Hey, there's a scene there. How do I identify?" Make a drawing of it. I made one. There it is. And I don't know why, but whenever I read this passage, I see it through Jesus' armpit. Sometimes one, or in this case, two. And so we're kind of looking at Jesus from behind there, and we're seeing the scene, and that's what I drew. And where I always start with this passage, where I always kind of, just by default, ending up feeling like the meaning of this passage is I kind of think, wow, Jesus is so cool. He even accepts people like Levi that do terrible stuff. That's really cool of Jesus to accept a guy like that. And I say that a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but guess what? That is the meaning of the passage. That is what we're trying to be shown there. That Jesus accepts anybody. Jesus accepts people who have done the most heinous of things, as long as they come to him. That's the beauty of the gospel, right? That we can all come to Jesus, no matter what we've done. But the problem is, if I stay there with that as my mantra, with that as the extent of my thinking on this passage, then I'm in for a bit of trouble. So I'm glad I got my thinking cap on tonight, because I came up with kind of like a little visual, and I'm thinking, you see, this is how I see it at first. I see that Levi is a guy that's trying to find out about God and trying to get close to God, Jesus. And then there's all these other people like the Galileans that are following Jesus around, and they want to get close to him too. They want to learn more about him too. But the thing that's mixing up everything is that Levi has some kind of power over them. You like that? There's like a fist coming down. It's like a power over them. And Levi, that's the whole problem with this. This is not just two people coming to meet Jesus. It's that Levi has some kind of power over the other people that are trying to get to Jesus. And then just follow me in my logic here. The problem is, if you would have asked Levi at this point, where does he fit into this? Levi, where do you see yourself on my little chart here? I wonder if Levi would say, "Oh, I'm just a bystander. I'm trying to get to Jesus. I'm just trying to get to Jesus." And you say, "Yeah, but what about how you're extorting money from your people. You've become a traitor. Look at you. Look at the system you're involved in. And he might say, No. I'm not that. I got people above me that are oppressing me. I've got Herod Antipas. Remember the guy that chopped off John the Baptist's head? Because that gets weird. Because his daughter did a dance for him and asked him to do that? Remember that guy? That's my boss. He's got power over me. I'm just doing what he... And then if you went to Herod Antipas and said, hey, what are you doing? He'd say, oh, there's people over me. There's the whole Roman government. Remember Pilate who executes Christ? That guy... He's above me. I'm just one rung in this sort of ladder of power. But I'm low. I'm not doing this to the people. I wonder if he would say that. Just wonder. But the deal is, check this out. This is even more convicting. He might say, hey, by the way, I'm trying to get to Jesus, and I've got all these religious leaders coming at me and saying I shouldn't be doing that. I've got maybe even Jesus' own followers are kind of snickering and pointing fingers and saying, hey, wait, why is this guy in our group? What's with him? How did he get to be here? I can imagine Levi saying that. And so just if you follow that kind of logic, if the ladder goes up, the ladder of power and the ladder of corruption goes up, then couldn't it go down also? Couldn't it go down also? In other words, I might be here, and I might say, hey, the deal is, I'm the good guy. I'm the good guy. Other people are trying to get at me. Other people are getting at me while I'm trying to get to Jesus. I'm the bystander here. It's the bad people that are messing with me. And there might be, but if I stop there, there's a problem. See, because tomorrow... Oh, yeah, the fifth. There. See, tomorrow I'll go to work and I'll stand in front of... by the way, if you don't know me, I'm a school teacher. I'm a music teacher in the Berkeley Public Schools. I'll stand in front of classes of kids where I am the white male in front of a group of kids who are mostly of color. Where I, as a middle-class person... Though I don't view myself as having money type of power, might be represent the wealthiest household in the room. I'm somebody who was born with a certain type of privilege and a certain sort of place in society that I didn't do anything to earn. I have an education that I didn't pay for, and I have, even though sometimes I joke during the week, low status. I have very high status when I'm in a certain group of people. I become very aware that I have power and privilege and that I can be seen just as Levi is often seen. I can be seen as the person who takes things without earning. I can be seen with the person as the person who, if he says the right thing, can get what he wants without deserving it. And see, to me it's no coincidence that in the book of Mark, what Deanna discussed last week, we have in the previous story, a story about a paralytic who's unclean because of something he didn't choose. And he's powerless, and he's at the bottom of the very, very bottom of the ladder. There's nobody on that power ladder lower than the paralytic. And people are keeping him from getting to Jesus. And then we've got this story of Levi, who's high on the ladder. And Jesus says, come to me. And we, as a reader, can put ourselves not only in that person who, some days I do feel like that person who doesn't have a voice, who is paralyzed, cannot get to Jesus. And quite frankly, in some of those cases, it's other people's fault. They're keeping me from getting to Jesus. That's true. And in other contexts, I'm Levi. I have everything. I have all the power. Saying the wrong thing or doing the wrong thing can actually paralyze someone else. I think it's really funny that because Tim and I didn't have a side conversation beforehand, but Tim talked about the power that we have as people with a certain amount of voice. How do we get that voice? Well, I think there are obvious things like, hey, we're all kind of aware of like our race, our gender, right? Our financial status, our class, maybe our education. Those are the kind of big ones. And I would just say, great, let's talk about those, even if they are obvious ones. You know the places in your own life where you have that kind of power because of those things, and vice versa, you are probably very, very aware of the places where you don't have power because of those things. And that's great. Let's talk about those. But then also, I think, let's dig deeper. Let's just talk about, even in the context of this place, or in the context of your family, or in the context of your workplace, let's dig deeper into things like, hey, what about just personality type? Do you have power over other people? Can you be looked at as a Levi just because of your personality type? The friendship groups who you're with, your allies at work versus their allies at work? What about language? Okay, I'm going to unwrap something with language, because I think we could be thinking a couple different things with language. Because at Church Without Walls, we talk about language in one way as sort of like, oh, at Church Without Walls, we try not to use like Christian language, right? That we try not to say the wrong thing, and we try to always say the right thing to make everybody feel welcome. But at the same time, what I would like to say is, there's no group of people, there's no organization that doesn't have their own language. That doesn't have the little things that they say that are sort of the inside stuff. And as much as we try to get rid of Christian language or sort of, you know, old-fashioned, inappropriate language, let's look at sort of what kind of inside language do we just have as Church Without Walls. But then there's the other kind of language. Let me unwrap this a little bit more. There's the other kind of language, which, I mean, English. Church Without Walls. We have a significant and lovely people group at our doorstep of the place that's supposed to not have any walls. And yet, right now, language is sort of becoming one of those. There's a great, active, vibrant, Spanish-speaking Bible study that's growing and growing and growing. And language is definitely an issue of how do we break down that wall of language and that sort of power structure of being somebody who speaks English. How can we break down that wall of language? So I don't have any answers. I have more questions than answers. But I want to open that up and kind of say, as we kind of dive into farther into Mark, right here, the next few weeks are going to be these kind of stories that kind of go, wait. I have more questions than answers. And I think that's a good spot to be. So I want to ask you, maybe as you're drawing your drawings, or you're not, you might do that later, as you're thinking about where are you in this story, I want you to think, where are you there? And I do want to say there are some people in the room, and I don't want to sound like I've been exclusive, there are some people in the room that say, hey, I have no power in my life. I've never had a place of privilege. I've never been the fist going downwards. And I validate that. I hear that. I know that. But I think there's a word for all of us here tonight. And what I want to say is that if you are a person of power and privilege, and you're making power plays, as I'm guilty of when I get carried away, as I do on a weekly basis, I'm sure, maybe even daily, I want to say Jesus will accept you no matter what. Jesus will. But what you're doing is, when you do that, when you use that power and make those power plays, you are closing off your access to relationships to the community that Deanna spoke about last week. You're closing off your access to that kind of community with people who are different from you. And likewise, if you are affected by people of power in a negative way, and like me, you fall back on the, well, if you fall back on that sort of more judgy sort of lens and saying, well, good thing Jesus will save those really bad people, then that's a different kind of spiritual, that's a kind of a spiritual blockade, isn't it? That prevents you from being in relationship with that people, that person, and reconciling with them. And not only that, but you're shortcutting yourself and your own need for Christ. See, the deal is, when Jesus was approached at the end of the story, and the Pharisees came and said, hey, why does Jesus eat with tax collectors and sinners? What they were basically saying, that word for sinners, just means sort of like people who aren't totally playing by the rules. It's a very soft word. The tax collector word is a really bad word that basically just means like, hey, those terrible people. Why does Jesus eat with sort of like the not so great people, just like who do regular kind of sinning? And then the tax collectors, why does he eat with them? And you know what Jesus' response is he says, hey, I'm here for sinners. I'm just here for sinners. See, his deal is, he doesn't respond by talking about the difference between the really bad stuff and the really good and the okay stuff, the good stuff. He just says, hey, I'm here for everybody. I'm here for the sinners. That's who I'm here for. And thank goodness that Christianity isn't defined by what we say it is, isn't it? It's defined by what Jesus says it is. We're a quiet church, but can somebody say amen to that?
Amen. All right.
Christianity is defined by what Jesus says it is. And he says, I'm here for sinners. I want to see people meet in the middle. I want to see the people who are in the high places start to defer some of that power. Realize what their privilege is. Realize where they have places of power and give some of that up. And I want to see people who have been affected by that come up to those people and enter into reconciliation, relationship with those people. So what can our next steps be? Well, the easy one, if it goes to the next slide, it's really not going. Oh, there it goes. The easy one is make a drawing. You got the green paper. That's the easy one. Make a drawing this week. The not so easy ones would be, hey, seek out somebody who you've made a power play on, who you've used your place of power and privilege to sort of supersede them, and go seek them out, make amends with them. And likewise, if you've been victimized by somebody in a place of power, I know this might sound naive, but I think God will be with you in seeking that person out and engaging into relationship with them. I really think God will bless that. The other thing that's just, hey, nobody's going to see, there's no tangible way to know it, but just this week to sort of identify those places in your life where, hey, in this relationship, I have all the power. What does that mean? When I go to this place in my week, I don't have any power. What does that mean? How do I use the power that I have? How do I react when I'm made the victim? Identify those places in your life and begin to talk about it with the community that is here, the people around you. That's what I invite you to do this week. So let's pray together. God, be with us as we inspect our own lives and start to look at hard things about the way we view good guys and bad guys, who we point the finger at, who we say is using power against us, and also when we look at ourselves. God, be with us as we say, hey, I've misused the power that I have, the privilege that I have. God, other people see me like Levi. Other people can see me as the person who's abusing power. Help me to identify that in my life. And please work through me in relationship with others around me. Work through us in our relationships together as a church, in our relationships with people in Berkeley, in our community here. In your name, amen.